God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things.
Thank you, friends, for tuning in to your Watchman on the Wall broadcast of Southwest Radio Church. This is Pastor Larry, your host. Supposing you were receiving public assistance from the government, and you were ordered by the government to replace crosses, religious symbols, and devotional items inside your homes with photographs of government officials and even the president himself. Would you do it? Supposing the government said if you don't comply with their order, they will withhold your public assistance checks. How would you feel? Is that happening today? Indeed it is, in China. According to Bob Fu, president of China Aid, the Chinese Communist Party has intensified its persecution by banning all religious activities, even those that take place in your own home, such as prayer meetings and Bible studies with family members. Government officials are ordering Christians who receive welfare payments to replace crosses, religious symbols, and images in their own homes with portraits of China's communist leaders. Now here's a question. Could that happen in the United States? I know there are probably some listeners who think that's far-fetched, but is it? You need to carefully examine the platform for those who are running for the office of president and vice president. Will you vote for candidates who will not allow you to opt out your children from sex ed classes that you don't approve of? I hope you vote, but I hope you vote intelligently. We should all be deeply concerned about the intensification of evil at the present time. I don't think there has ever been a generation like this present one. There's always been sin and evil following the fall, but at the present time, sin and evil has intensified and strengthened. It is really a perfect storm. There has been a combination of factors that has been favorable to intensifying sin and evil so that sin and evil have reached a new plane of destruction and devastation. I have a DVD before me that I want to highly recommend, and I really mean that. It is titled Silent Cry, The Darker Side of Trafficking. Now, friends, if you know anything about the evil of trafficking, you know it is dark. But did you know there is a darker side? Silent Cry is a Josh Peck documentary created by Skywatch Films. With me on the phone is Josh Peck, no stranger to our listening audience. Thank you, Josh, so much for being on the show and for this tremendously shocking, to say the least. Thank you for your ministry.
Oh, thank you for having me on. It's great to talk with you again, Larry.
Well, Josh, can you introduce the movie and talk a bit broadly on what it's about, and then we'll start to focus on some things?
Yes, absolutely. So it deals with child sex trafficking, but it's not a typical trafficking documentary. So trafficking is happening everywhere in America because largely it's been ignored, unfortunately, until about this year. It goes deeper, though. There's also a rampant occultism tied in with trafficking, and that's the thought behind the subtitle, The Darker Side of Trafficking. It doesn't imply that there's a lighter side. It implies that there's a side to this whole thing that most people aren't aware of, and that's the occult ties to it. Now, it's not the film is not focused on unsubstantiated conspiracy theory and wild claims, nothing like that, but we also don't hold back in the film. We don't sugarcoat, but we don't sensationalize. So Silent Cry goes where no other documentary has gone before in showing the truth of child sex trafficking from experts who have seen and experienced it firsthand. I was really selective on who I invited to be in the film because I wanted real experts who are actively working in the field today and not just somebody with an unqualified opinion. I wanted to ensure that everything in the movie is accurate, so there's only 7 guests. Originally, I had 12 guests, but due to COVID travel restrictions, we weren't able to include everyone. But we do have audio interviews with the guests that we weren't able to feature in the film, including Russ Dizdar, Greg Reed, William Ramsey, and more. But the main thing to take away from it, just generally speaking, is it's unlike any trafficking documentary that's ever been done before. It does not sensationalize, so everything in the film, people will be able to corroborate its truth, but it also does not hold back. It doesn't sugarcoat the problem. It does get into areas that most other films haven't touched before.
Well, tell us about some of the people in the movie. I mean, Ilanka Deaton, Jacob Boyens. Wow, they've got shocking stories. And and you've got some others. Tell us about the people who speak.
Absolutely. So I went to great lengths to get the top experts in the field today, not only in the statistical information that's available, but also personal testimonies, people who have been through this firsthand. So we have Yako Buyan. He's been a previous guest on Skywatch TV. He directed and produced the feature film 8 Days to raise awareness about the reality of sex trafficking in the United States. He's the founder of Share Together, which is a nonprofit organization fighting against the global crisis of sex trafficking. He's been on the front line of this issue for years. His sister, Alanka Deaton, she is a survivor of child sex trafficking. She tells her whole story in the film. She also works with Yako against child sex trafficking. Both of these two together really make up the first part of the film. So you get the eyewitness testimony, the personal account, but you also get a lot of statistical information as well. And then beyond that, we have David Heavener. He's kind of our Hollywood insider. He's a producer, actor, musician, filmmaker. He speaks openly about sex trafficking and the problems in Hollywood that he's seen firsthand in association with the entertainment industry. And today he works with victims of trafficking and satanic ritual abuse. So we even deal with that in the film. Stephen Bancars, he was a previous guest on Skywatch TV as well for the book that we wrote together, Second Coming of the New Age. He's an investigative researcher into sex trafficking and Satanism. Before becoming a Christian, he was one of the most well-known voices in the New Age movement, but he's a Christian now, so he's on the right team. We have Thomas Dunn, a filmmaker and director of Detestable. He's an advocate for victims of satanic ritual abuse. He works with other experts to assist people coming out of satanic ritual abuse and trafficking and helping them adjust to a normal life. We have Joe Horn, who's the COO of Skywatch TV. He helps run Whispering Ponies Ranch, which is a ministry dedicated to helping children heal after being rescued from sex trafficking and abuse. And he runs that alongside his mother and father, author, and he's also the author of the best-selling book, Time Bomb. Speaking of his father, we have Tom Horn, CEO of Skywatch TV. Most of your audience should be familiar with him. He runs Whispering Ponies Ranch as well, alongside his wife, Nita. And again, in order to bring healing to children victims of sex trafficking, he also works to educate families about the dangers and unfortunate frequency of child sex trafficking. He's author of the book Shadowland, which inspired certain parts of Silent Cry. And it's also narrated by John B. Wells, who has one of the most recognizable voices in America, and he hosts Caravan to Midnight. Also, our very own Derek Gilbert narrates part one of the movie. He's host of Skywatch TV, Sci-Friday, Unraveling Revelation, and View from the Bunker, and several other things out there. And then I'm in it too, but I'm not speaking as an expert in the movie. I'm mainly there to kind of guide the audience through the information that we're kind of all learning together in this film. So that's kind of a brief rundown of the people that the audience will be able to find in the film. And I want to mention too, is with Whispering Ponies Ranch, 100% of the profits of this film, whether they rent it on Amazon or if they buy it at SkywatchTVStore.com, 100% of the profits of this film go to Whispering Ponies Ranch to help these kids who have been rescued from child sex trafficking.
Well, as we continue, Josh, tell us about the Finders. Why did you tackle the story of the Finders right away in the film?
Oh, absolutely. So many people right now think that we should look to the government to solve this problem. And we have examples showing that the government has actually been complicit in covering up and even in some cases perpetrating this crime, even going back decades. So the Finders case is one of the best examples. And I wanted to include that to show that, yes, there is a lot of sensationalism online. There's a lot of conspiracy theory, but this is not one of those areas. So the basic rundown of what the whole Finders case is, in 2018 and 2019, the FBI declassified nearly 650 heavily redacted pages relating to a group known as the Finders, which contains evidence that the State Department and CIA was at best complicit and at worst directly involved and conspired to cover up investigation and charges. So at the time that this group was discovered, the public was told, you know, a certain version of the story, and we found out decades later, you know, just recently, that that wasn't the whole truth. So the official story that people were told was that the Finders was a post-hippie commune of off-the-grid futurists. They were discovered in 1987 in Tallahassee when a woman saw 6 malnourished children with 2 well-dressed men at a park, and something didn't seem right about it. So she decided to play it safe. She called the police, and then 2 weeks after that call was made, The entire case was dropped. It was largely forgotten. No real information was released until the documents much later. I mean, just recently. So the documents decades later were released. And now we can see that the official story at the time was completely fabricated. I know we're limited on time here, so I can just go through some of the main points that kind of correlate with what we're talking about today. But in the film, the people that watch the film, they'll get the full story. We actually put the documents on the screen straight from the FBI website, which people can look up today. So we do all that. But, and again, there's a lot that we still don't know because these documents are heavily redacted. But from what we can piece together, it's a horrifying story. So while they were in custody, these two men and the kids, the men were being difficult. They weren't providing proof of identification, proof that they were the guardians of these children. And it was also discovered that there was another finder's case in Washington, D.C. So police were able to find that out there with the police department in Washington, D.C., working with the police department in Tallahassee. So there was at least two of these. Police searched properties belonging to the finders. They found hand-drawn pentagrams. They found animal bones. There was other undisclosed pieces of evidence of satanic and cult ritual. They also found cages that witnesses said were used to keep children in during their visits. There was documents on how to obtain children, strange things like that. And the documents expressed the suspicion that the finders were even being used by the U.S. government and the state on the state and federal level, because a member of the finders named Isabella was discovered to have worked for the U.S. government from 1950 to 1971. But one of the most horrifying parts of this whole story was the proof of child abuse that was found in these documents. There actually was discovered, this was discovered before the case was dropped, there was clear sexual abuse of these children. The police questioned the children that were with the two men in the park. The kids described various things like seeing women walking around naked at their home and strange things like that. But while they were being interviewed, they were extremely malnourished. They were sick. They were so weak and sick that they urinated and defecated on the floor. So the children were medically examined, and at least two of them that we can find in the documents, at least two named Max and Mary, were confirmed cases of sexual abuse. So the details and evidence of the sexual abuse, they're way too explicit for an interview like this to talk about. We do give details in the movie, but the form detailing the abuse had an original date of February 4th, 1987. So February 4th. Now on February 18th, 2 weeks after the confirmation of sexual abuse was discovered, the entire case against the finders was dropped. No arrests were made. The two men had all charges against them dropped, and the children were even sent back with no attempts of rehabilitation or foster care or anything like that. So this is a clear-cut example of some higher-ups just shutting the case down without reason, without giving any kind of explanation. You can even find in the documents there were unnamed investigators that were really upset about this, and they were saying that, you know, the finder's case is something that we should be looking into and that we should keep an eye on. So we deal with that right in the beginning of the movie to show that the government can't really be trusted to end this problem because they're complicit or sometimes even perpetrate this crime, and they even did so back in the 80s. So are we to assume that, you know, since then they've just decided to clean up their act? You know, I think if anything, it's probably gotten worse. Now, thankfully, we do have a president and we do have a few loyal people in political power that are willing to fight against trafficking. You know, President Trump has done quite a bit against it, but he's really fighting an uphill battle. So what we talk about in the film is how it's up to the individual. It's our individual responsibility to not contribute to a society that sexualizes children. A lot of people canceled their Netflix subscription over that recent movie, Cuties, that sexualized children and exploited them pretty heavily. So that's a good example of things that we as individuals can do to kind of turn the culture back around, make it a safer place for our children. So the solution is not going to be waiting around for the government to handle it, because that's not going to happen. We as individuals need to handle it. So that's why we dealt with that right in the beginning of the movie, to kind of dispel this idea that the government has the best interest of the children at hand, when in most cases they don't.
Well, you know, many times when I think of sex trafficking, I think of Southeast Asia and so forth, but you've got a couple of scenes from Wisconsin, the United States of America. I mean, like I said at the beginning, the evil is unbelievable, but I shouldn't be shocked because if you're willing to kill 70 million unborn babies, what's next? You know, I mean, this is nothing. You and I and Tom Horn and we all deal with the dark side of things, but this, I don't know, I've never been so stricken in my whole life how wicked our society is. And we're departing from God. We're making fun of the Bible. We are, as a society, so politically correct, you can't even sing Merry Christmas or whatever. And this is absolutely shocking. Friends, you need to get this DVD. And we're going to have to wrap it up. But Josh, thank you for being with us. We know we're going to have you back for another program.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Thank you for having me on.
Well, friends, please be assured you will be shocked, and you need to know what's going on in our own country. Matthew, please come to the mic and tell our listeners how they can get Silent Cry.
Thank you, Pastor Larry. Our special offer today is the new DVD by Tom Horn and Josh Peck titled Silent Cry, The Darker Side of Trafficking. You can have your own copy for a gift of $25 if you live in the United States, and $40 if you live in Canada. To place your order, just call our toll-free number 1-800-652-1144. It is fast and easy. And you can order anytime on our website at swrc.com. We also have the best-selling book by Tom Horn titled Shadowland. This is the perfect companion book to the DVD. You can have a copy of Shadowland for a gift of $20. Better yet, get both the DVD, Silent Cry, and the book, Shadowland, for a gift of $35. The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. And the website is swrc.com. Here again is Pastor Larry.
The media's favorite race-baiting professor and author, Ibram Kendi, a CBS contributor, tweeted a nasty attack against Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett and her family recently. As news broke that she is pro-life, white, knows she is a female, and is President Trump's pick, Kendi called her a white colonizer because she and her husband adopted two black children from Haiti.
The Boston University professor, whose 2019 book, How to Be an Anti-Racist, continues to be given ample airtime and promotion from the left-wing media. Mr. Kendi tweeted, "Some white colonizers adopted black children. They civilized these savage children in the superior ways of white people, while using them as props in their lifelong pictures of denial, while cutting the biological parents of these children out of the picture of humanity." Close quotes.
Mr. Kendi is assuming an awful lot. He is assuming that Amy Coney Barrett considers black children inferior savages, stole the kids from the parents, and is stroking her conscience because of her racist tendencies. Mr. Kendi is assuming an awful lot that, because of his hate-filled heart, makes him what the first three letters of the word assume spell.
Mr. Kendi is also assuming that he knows for sure that white people only adopt black children because they have a white savior complex. There might be some white people who do that, but how can Mr. Kendi know that is true for Amy Coney Barrett? Mr. Kendi claims to have powers of insight that not many people have.
Just apply Mr. Kendi's reasoning to the story of the Good Samaritan in Luke chapter 10. The man who fell among robbers was beaten and left for half dead. A priest came by and then a Levite. They did absolutely nothing to help the poor man. But then a Samaritan, a man from a race of so-called half-breeds who were despised by many Jews, came and had compassion on this victim. The Samaritan bound up his wounds and poured oil and wine on them, put him on his animal, and paid for his lodging. By Mr. Kendi's reasoning, this Samaritan was a scoundrel. He was taking care of this man and was faking his compassion so he could make Samaritans look good and Jews look bad. He even expected the Jerusalem Post to do a special story on the Samaritan to shame Jewish exclusivity. Furthermore, Mr. Kendi could claim that Jesus used a story tinged with racism and even deceived readers of the Bible who would take the story at face value.
Doesn't Ibram Kendi teach at Boston University, Pastor Larry?
Yes, he does, Marvin.
I wouldn't send my kids to Boston University. They would come out Marxist and maybe would be part of the LGBTQ movement. They would be cursing America on the 4th of July.
That's one of the things that is wrong with America. Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez studied at some school in Boston. She got a full dose of Marxism, transgenderism, and probably did advanced studies on how to stir up trouble and burn down American cities. We are so fortunate that some kids who go to schools like that do not graduate with their minds poisoned.
Since many believe the United States of today is intentionally and foundationally racist and descendants of slaves have no opportunities in this nation, it's no surprise to read this report in Breitbart.com dated August 24th. It tells of Dr. Eric Mason, pastor of Epiphany Fellowship Church in Philadelphia, who suggested reparations including centuries worth of college tuition during his sermon, August 23rd. Dr. Mason argued that the United States needs to adapt a variety of social reforms to address race-based disparities while preaching a sermon entitled A Biblical Case for Reparations. He proposed a series of policies that would go beyond mere welfare because, according to the preacher, programs like Social Security were created for white people. Reparations has to be comprehensive because the offenses were everything from emotional to economic, he argued. As such, necessary parts of reparations include psychological reparations, paying for counseling, and the telling of history properly, presumably through reductionist narratives like the New York Times 1619 Project. Mason zeroed in on education, saying that the United States government should fund historically black colleges and universities fully for 200 years, pay the tuition cost for descendants of slaves for the next 200 years, and cancel student debt for all black graduates, even compensating those that have already paid off their debts. Quoting Mason, HBCUs funded for the next 200 years, and right after that, you ain't get this, did you? Descendants of slaves not paying for college for 200 years, he said. Nobody. And canceling every black person's student loan debt and repaying blacks who paid for student loans. Mason conceded that reparations will not resolve all racial issues. Now, I'm not saying that reparations is going to bring peace on earth. Jesus will bring peace on earth. However, while we're on earth, we got to make the most of our time. To whom was given more, more will be given to him, Mason added. The Philadelphia pastor got this part right. Jesus will bring peace on earth. And he is right that while we are on earth, we got to make the most of our time. The foundation for his message, however, is totally wrong. Luke 12:48 is the key here. One can only hope that someone in his congregation, no matter who paid for it, had enough of an education to correctly read that verse. It doesn't even hint of more of this world's goods for the one who already has, but greater responsibility is on the shoulders of those stewards who have been given much. Correctly read the verse. It says, "For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall be much required. And to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask the more." Testing, testing, testing. That's how Pelosi and the Democrats say we'll defeat the coronavirus. Meantime, President Trump and his administration are working at breakneck pace to develop therapeutics, diagnostics, and a vaccine for the Wuhan flu. Unlike testing, treatments will actually do something for you when you come down sick with the disease. But now we're learning the overwhelming majority of those who have tested positive for the coronavirus should really have been found negative after all. According to the New York Times, potentially 90% of those who have tested positive have such insignificant amounts of the virus present in their bodies that such individuals do not need to isolate, nor are they candidates for contact tracing. Most of the people are not likely to be contagious, and identifying them may contribute to bottlenecks that prevent those who are contagious from being found in time, warns the Times. So if overtesting is causing bottlenecks that keep us from identifying contagious people in time, what does the New York Times believe the solution should be? More testing. It helps to understand the Times' religious devotion to testing if one understands that Democrats have long since committed to taking the popular opposite position of whatever President Trump believes. It's a symptom of Trump derangement syndrome. If Trump believes we should focus less on testing and more on treatments, Democrats in the media will insist we do nothing but testing and forget about treatments altogether. This is the state of reference through which the Times can publish an article admitting that overtesting is creating deadly delays while continuing their demand for increased testing. The Times has now modified its call for more testing to say everyone should specifically get a rapid test, which has a higher threshold for the quantity of virus needed in order to render a positive result. In what may be a step in this direction, the Trump administration announced on Thursday that it would purchase 150 million rapid tests, the Times admitted. A step? 150 million rapid tests is enough to test nearly half of all Americans. And that's just a step, in the Times' estimation. If the coronavirus has made one thing clear, it's that so-called scientists and experts are wrong. They can't accurately forecast a virus. They tell us different things about the effectiveness of a face mask. They insist the virus can't spread at left-wing protests. And there's a myriad of other examples showing us the experts are really just making it all up as they go along with their political biases on display for everyone with eyes to see.
There is a sinister wickedness encompassing our country. It doesn't fit any profile and strikes without warning. Our special offer today exposes this wickedness. The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. If you would like to send us your prayer request, or if you have a question or comment, please send them to Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And we invite you to visit our website where you can hear this program again or look through our materials at swrc.com. Thank you for being with us today. Join us tomorrow when Pastor Larry talks with Josh Peck on the Watchman on the Wall program from Southwest Radio Church.